I've called this week's reflection of one being. The phrase comes from the Nicene Creed, and the Nicene Creed is the Church's attempt to articulate the essential mystery of Christian faith, the mystery of Jesus. He, so the Creed confesses, is of one being with God, and at the same time, he is truly human. The Creed doesn't explain how this can be or even what it means. It simply testifies that it's so. And it seems to me the Gospel reading we just heard does the same. On the one hand, it portrays Jesus as a human being relating to other human beings at the same level, teaching, being moved, sharing a meal, praying. On the other hand, because of what happens around him, because of what he effects in the world, he's depicted as manifesting an entirely different quality of being than we habitually find among us. In fact, three times in this passage, Jesus is depicted being as God is. He's said to have had compassion for the crowd because they were like sheep without a shepherd. The Greek word for compassion here, esplagmithe, is used for the Hebrew rahim or womb. This is an image used in the Hebrew scripture to describe God's compassion, the compassion of a mother. Jesus is said to be moved as God is moved when he sees, drawing on another image from the Hebrew scripture, that the people are like sheep without a shepherd, in need of what only God can give them. Next, he's said to feed people in the wilderness. This is a clear reference to God's provision of manna in the desert to the people of Israel during their exodus from Egypt. Though significantly, where in the Hebrew narrative the people were provided with only as much as they needed, no more and no less, in this gospel story Jesus is said to generate an abundance. 12 baskets full, the banquet of heaven. And finally, and most intriguingly, he's depicted as intending to pass by his disciples as he walks towards them on the water. At first, this episode looks a bit like the story of the calming of the storm, which occurs earlier in this gospel. The disciples are out at sea, straining against an adverse wind, while Jesus proves himself once again master of the wind and waves, bringing order to chaos. Now, the scholar David Neville has argued there's even more going on in this little story. He suggests that the key reference in this episode is to another part of the Exodus story, in which Moses had said to God, "Show me your glory, I pray." God had replied to Moses, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim before you the name, the Lord," which in Hebrew is Yahweh, or I am, from the verb to be. So, in the Exodus story, Moses is told to stand on a rock and, says God, "While my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft of the rock and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." So compare our passage from the Gospel. When Jesus walked on the sea towards his disciples, he intended, says the text, to pass them by. Exactly the same phrasing. And when they saw him coming, his disciples cried out in fear, thinking him a ghost. Then Jesus proclaims before them the name of God. Take heart, it is I, or I am in the Greek. And surely this resonance is not accidental. Yet there's also an astonishing difference, where the God who proclaims the divine name in the Exodus story must not be seen front on, lest his servant Moses perish at the sight of his face. In the gospel narrative, Jesus proclaims the divine name and then straight away gets into the boat with his disciples. In him, it seems, God can be met face to face. But the problem is the disciples do not recognise him and cannot discern the meaning of what just happened. They were utterly astounded. Confounded. And Mark connects their stupefaction with their general incomprehension about Jesus' identity. For neither, he says, did they understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. It brings together all these stories. So three times in this passage, Mark explicitly points to Jesus being of one being with God. Our empirically minded culture tends to interpret the miracle stories as if they're supposed to function to prove this claim. Look at the loaves. Look at the wind ceasing. He must be God. And then we get worried about whether or not these things really happened, and so whether they really do prove anything about who Jesus was. But that's not actually what Mark is doing with these stories. I've tried to show that these miracle stories are highly stylized, intentionally theological statements. They're written from the perspective of someone who is already convinced that God is directly at work in Jesus, and who is drawing on the symbolic resources of his tradition to communicate this conviction. In other words, for Mark, it's not that the miracles prove that Jesus shares the being of God. Rather, he's testifying that what became manifest in the world and in human relationships when Jesus was near was the kind of thing you'd expect to happen when God is near. What happened in people's experience of Jesus was unlooked for compassion, clarity of vision, and abundant provision. What became manifest was a kind of sheer presence, a fullness of being, which was at the edge of people's capacity to behold, but which nevertheless caused them peace and the inexplicable cessation of striving and anxiety. In his presence, they glimpsed and felt something of the pure grace and creativity of life with a capital L itself. True God of true God. That's what these stories are trying to tell us. And like an invitation and promise woven through these stories is the possibility that we too may become simple and still and silent enough to experience this presence and participate in it. The whole sequence begins with Jesus inviting his disciples to come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while. This is not, as the text makes clear, to avoid engagement with the needs of the world, but to enable engagement to emerge from a truer place. Pope Francis has said, preaching on this passage, "Only a heart that does not allow itself to be taken over by hastiness is capable of being moved. That is, of not being caught up in itself and by things to do, but aware of others, of their wounds, their needs. Compassion," he says, "is born from contemplation." And this is why, each day, before anything else, or as in today's reading, at the end of the day's activities, Jesus would withdraw in prayer, in silence, in intimacy with God. Pope Francis writes, "If we learn to truly rest, we become capable of true compassion. If we cultivate a contemplative outlook, we will carry out our activities without that rapacious attitude of those who want to possess and consume everything. If we stay in touch with the Lord and do not anesthetize the deepest part of ourselves, the things to do will not have the power to cause us to get winded or devour us. We need," says the Pope, "an ecology of the heart that is made up of rest, contemplation, and compassion." Well, this is the ecology we've been seeking to tend even more intentionally this month of Sabbath at Benedictus. It's an ecology, an attention, a capacity for presence that seems to me the necessary condition for any true and truly regenerative response to the chaos and anxiety, the grasping and sense of lack that threatens to overwhelm our world. So let us continue to entrust ourselves to this way and to the one who beckons us on it. Let us open ourselves to his presence with us, that we may become ever more as he is, a sign of and an access to the peaceable goodness at the heart of all things.